What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, their families, communities, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome students and administrators from Crossroad Academy. I welcome Zaki Gowire. He's a junior, and he's into public speaking.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you. Sean Friesen. He's in the 10th grade. Music is his thing.
Glad to be here. Nice.
Okay. And also Zemi Wakeji. He is in the 9th grade, and basketball is his thing. If you could see him, you would know.
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you. Also, we have Ms. Camry Floyd. She's the assistant principal for secondary.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And Kevin Forehand. He's the principal of Crossroads Academy Charter School.
Good afternoon.
And I just welcome you all and very glad to have you. What is it like growing up black and male in America? The shooting of unarmed men brings intense attention to the role that race plays in black Americans' interaction with police. How does a black male face the important challenges of life in America 2015 and live to see another day? How do you do it? What do you experience? I'm just opening it up.
Well, I believe it's, I think it's a black male's attitude, how he carries himself.
Okay.
You know, like a certain way, like you said, we're going to speak about emotions soon, but I think it's like when we feel that we're being targeted, you know, by another Caucasian male or, you know, anybody else. I just believe it's how we take, you know, how we act upon that action and, you know, what we do next is what matters.
And you bring up some good points, and we'll get back to those. I'd like to hear from everyone, and then we'll come back and kind of look at what everyone is saying.
Backtracking off what he said, facial expressions, that's a very big topic. I feel like certain people just have mean faces, but they don't mean what their face means. There can be really nice people out there.
So what I hear you saying then is that there's a nonverbal communication plays a big role in it.
Yes.
They're not saying anything, but it's the affect, it's how they look. And on the other side, it's how that look is interpreted.
Yes, they can feel
and that
threatened.
Can be a big problem, too. So you're okay. All right.
I agree with everything that they're saying, but it makes me more feel like I have something to prove. Like, I can do as much as he can do.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because of my color, but because of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And either educational standards or athletic.
Okay. What I'm asking, let me ask you, Mr. Forehand. Well, you're a black male and a principal, so I'm sure you have a lot that you can add to that.
Well, I think it's important for all people of color to recognize that, one, you are a person of color, and although you might think the world is fair, it doesn't always come across that way. And so you have to be extra prepared for those adversities. I think it's important for you to always remember that you are in a competition, and life is a competition.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Ms. Floyd.
Well, listening,
from the female perspective.
Listening to some of the stories that my students have told, I can honestly say that growing up African-American as a female is starkly different from growing up as an African-American male. So, during my career in education, I've gained a new appreciation for the black male experience.
Elaborate on that. Give me an example.
Well, Zaki and I were talking one day, and he described a store that he frequents. He said he goes in the store every morning, and he said he's very careful to acknowledge the proprietor and to be visible at all times and to remain very open for fear that the proprietor will misunderstand him and will target him, as he said. And I guess I'll allow him to elaborate on that.
Elaborate, yeah.
All right, so it's this store down the road from my house. I go in there almost every morning, you know, my grandmother, she sends me to get, like, groceries and stuff. So when I first started, it's like I walked in, I had on like regular clothes and stuff. And so I'll be in the back trying to get, you know, whatever I came in to get. And he'll just look at me, always watching me. It's like other people in the store, but his eyes is pointed towards me. And he's saying, like, do I need help? Constantly asking, do I need help? Is everything okay? And I'm like, yes, sir, yes, sir. And so, like, around now he understands that, you know, I've been coming in. You know, I make sure that I have a haircut. You know, I always look at him, make sure I answer, yes, sir. And if it's a ma'am, I say, no, ma'am. And I make sure, you know, that if you ask me, everything's all right, I say, yes, sir. And I go and do what I got to do. And so, yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like you have to walk the straight and narrow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyone else have experiences like that?
I'll say that I think it's important, and I've talked with the guys a lot about appearances.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you fit a stereotype, I don't think it should matter what your color is. You know, if you go in the store and you're dressed in all black, whether you're black man, white man, or Hispanic, if you're dressed in all black and you have on a black hoodie and a black outfit and a black hat, then you might look suspicious. But it's also important not to forget that black people carry that stereotype whether they're wearing all black or not. I had an experience myself, even before I became a principal. As a teacher, I went to a conference, and when you first arrive at a hotel, you're not always dressed in the conference attire. You're dressed in, you know, jogging suit or travel attire.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was stopped by security to verify whether or not I was actually supposed to be in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand how that stereotype and how that can make one feel, because I've been in that experience myself.
Can I ask, and for them, how did you handle that?
Well, I actually just took my room card out and said, yes, I'm supposed to be in the hotel. But then I went to hotel management and said, look, you know, I'm supposed to be in the hotel, but your security guy doesn't think so. So I want you to have a talk with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't get irate and, you know, make a scene, because that wasn't going to solve anything at the time. Sometimes you have to not react, as one of the gentlemen just said, and then you have to take things in the appropriate manner.
Right.
John.
Yeah.
Have you had any experiences like that? I mean, just feeling like you are focused on because
of color,
of being you.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, as a child, you know, you like to go out a lot, and you know, fashion isn't style. You know, certain fashions get looked at differently.
Okay.
So going out in places such as, I'll say, like hotel lobbies and things, because those are where the parties are starting to go at.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in a few, and I've been kicked out because they felt like I was threatening them because of my attire. Because, you know, certain people dress differently. And as a black male, stereotypical dressing is big. Like you said, all black, you're going to get dressed, you're going to get checked, questioned, all that. So, yeah, I've been kicked out of, like, certain places because I've had on all black because I just didn't have anything to wear.
Okay. All right. I want to go back to something I think that he said, and that was about the attitude. And, oh, the attitude that you convey. How do you convey an attitude? I mean, what does that mean when they say the attitude? I mean, how do you convey an attitude?
Like Mr. Forehand has stated, how he handled his situation with the security. That he basically told what, like, about the attitude. It's like he could have, you know, the security checked him. He could have just gotten mad, right? Like, you know, I'm supposed to be here. Like, you don't know me and all that. He could have did that. But instead, he showed him his card and he went to the hotel management. That's what I mean by attitude. It's like someone, and Sean, when he got kicked out of the party, he could have, say Sean supposedly had a friend that had a gun on him. And if Sean got mad, the friend wanted to back Sean up, and that could have had a whole disaster. So it's like, say, attitude. So, like, say if someone's trying to target me, It's like my attitude is like I remain calm and I see the situation and I handle it. Your attitude will make you handle it a different way, you know, in a positive way.
Okay. Do you feel like remaining calm is always the way to go?
Yes. Most times it is.
Okay.
Because if you throw yourself out of character, there you're going to be proving the point they want you to prove. You're going to be showing them what a black young male acts like. Outrageous, always loud, mad, angry, and threatening to people.
So, are there situations where you should be outraged and black and angry and mad? I mean, I'm just trying to get a feel for this. I mean, are there situations that you should respond in that way? I mean, from you all.
Personally, I feel... It's me. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that there's a situation that I should be outrageous. Because me, I'm a calm person always. So I believe being calm is the right way.
The only way I'll feel to get outrageous is if I'm being tried in. I won't say such as my habitat, but a place that I'm usually comfortable in.
Okay.
And they try to tell me how
like
I
should,
yeah, like my house. Yeah, like they come in there and they try to tell me how I should be dressed and how I should act in my house.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel like they should.
I think there are issues that require you to be outraged and upset, but it's a way that you should handle that and display that anger or display that the outrage. That is appropriate. You know, displaying your outrage doesn't mean you pull a gun or start a fight.
Exactly.
It means that you can go speak to your legislator.
You can be assertive.
You can be assertive. You can protest peacefully.
Yeah.
You know, we've learned from many examples in history about peaceful protests. So I think there are ways for you to display outrage.
Okay. Because what I hear from you all, what I feel from you all, is that as young black males, you're walking on eggshells. All the time. I mean, that's the message that you're conveying. So I want to make sure that that's the way it actually is. You know, that you feel like you are targets unless you are in your own maybe home and immediate community where there's the safety and the understanding. And you think about that. You're tuned into 411 Teen. Interesting program. We're talking about growing up black and male in America. We've got some dynamic folks here from Crossroad Academy. We're going to take a break, but we'll get back right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and we are talking about the dynamics that are involved in growing up black and male in America. I have three students from Crossroad Academy and the assistant principal for secondary and Crossroad Academy principal. What is your reaction to the multitude of shootings of unarmed black men that have been going on throughout the country? From Florida to Ferguson to New York to D.C. to Ohio to Washington. We can go on and on and on. Right. But what's your reaction to this?
I feel as if it makes me kind of fearful, you know.
Okay.
Like, I'm afraid because I don't know who's next, you know. Like, if I look back over those incidents, it seems like what Du Bois did when Ms. Foyan said, with the Skittles and the hoodie and all, you know.
Trayvon
Martin. I basically, if I go to the store, you know, and I'm in my home environment, I can probably, you know, and it's cold, I'll wear a hoodie and, you know, I won't have the hood on, but, you know, I'll go in the store with a hoodie on and stuff like that. And so I feel scared now because that's like everyday, you know, apparel. Like, what if I'm next? You know, it makes me want to watch my back even more.
Okay. Zimmy.
Well, I don't really fear for anything when I go out because I live in a biracial household. Like, my mother is white and my dad is black.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I can see from both sides and see how each other view each other. And I know that if I look a certain way and talk a certain way and act a certain way around anybody watching, then I mostly won't get in situations like that. And most times it's not mainly stereotypes. It's just somebody not doing their job right. Because in most of those, like, the police officers had a background of doing, like, violent, excessive brutality. So.
Okay. That's the way you handle it. What about you, Sean?
There's always a time where when I go out, I have to look over my shoulder because I don't feel safe in certain places.
When you say these certain places, let's elaborate. Give me an idea of the places that you feel unsafe.
I don't feel safe in, like, malls, open spaces, because there's always a time. So patrol outlets, police officers are everywhere now.
Okay. Okay.
And there are times where I just always have to watch my back or who's behind me and watch who I'm with.
Okay.
That's always who I watch. The company that I keep around me. If I'm looking straight, they got to look straight with me because I don't want any of us to be racially profiled at all.
Okay. All right. Comments?
I was going to say that I think it's enlightening sometimes when things happen in the world that garner our attention, such as the unarmed shootings. And it's an awakening for us because although we live in a somewhat homogeneous environment, you know, everyone in our community kind of looks the same, and the police officers are all the same, of the same race, it kind of awakens the fact that when we travel and when we go, things don't happen the same way in our community that they do in the quote unquote real world.
Yes.
And so when we talk to kids about, you know, their future and their possibilities of going to college out of state or wherever they may tend to go, that these are things that exist. And so your preparation has to, you know, extend beyond the walls of our own community. And I brought Zemi with us because he always has an interesting perspective, because he's from a biracial household, and so it's good for his other peers to hear his perspective and share, you know, both sides of the spectrum, I think.
Mm-hmm. Comments, Zemi, on just generally preparation, and he talked about preparation, being prepared for where you are going and what you're going to do, and life, okay, overall. What kinds of things has been done with you as far as preparation? And when by that, I'm really referring to what some of us call the talk, okay? Have your parents had the talk with you? Now, you know, the talk will involve, you know, a real life, down-to-earth conversation about how you, as a black male, carry yourself and maneuver around in America, whether it's your community or other communities. Because even though you may be in a homogeneous community, there are things there in your own community that you have to be aware of. So let's talk about the talk. If you've had the talk, and what was the talk, and if not, maybe you didn't need to talk, but have you experienced the talk? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I've had like several talks.
Okay.
About color, about other things. Like mostly every day or probably every other day, my mother will remind me that, like, me being a black male, it's not good numbers that I'm gonna turn out successful. Mm-hmm. The numbers aren't good. And so she has to, like, get on me, I do my work, make sure I make it to training, I do everything that I need to do so that later I could fund her and fund the rest of my family.
Okay. All right. So you've had the talk. What about you?
You know, I totally agree with what Zemi stated. You know, I had a talk, you know, basically how to carry myself, you know.
Who gave you this talk?
My mother, and I have a lot of mentors in my life, throughout my life. So they basically tell me, you know, carry yourself well. You know, you're a black male. The odds are against me, you know. So it's not, the odds are set up where, you know, so many black males will make it in life. So they want me to be one of those black males, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, you know, turn around the odds so it won't be no odds. You know, everybody can make it. But basically tell me, you know, like, always do my work, you know. Never slack off. Never procrastinate. So.
Has any of your talks involved how you deal with authority, with law authorities? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, yes, ma'am. I want to get yes. specifics. I mean, you know, we know, yeah, they're always going to tell you you're black male, you got to be careful, you got to look up. That's. But I want to get down to the real gritty of it. Mm-hmm. What kinds of things do you need to do or avoid? What if when you're stopped?
One of the things that we did as a school last December, after the media kind of took all of the unarmed shooters by storm, was we invited all the gentlemen to the classroom. I mean, to the gym mm-hmm. In secondary, and then we invited law enforcement, lawyers, parents, fathers, to give them a conversation. We called it a conversation with our sons. And we had that conversation where there were real guys, gentlemen were able to ask real questions. How do you handle law enforcement? What should I do? And so we thought that that was one of our contributions to the movement.
Okay. All right. Now, Ms. Floyd, you mentioned that one thing that you've become aware of in your conversations with the students is the difference between the male and the female and their experiences and how individuals respond to them. Would you talk about that and share that? What you have observed?
Well, I can give you one excellent example. Last year, I took the 11th grade students, well, Zaki's class, mm-hmm. to Atlanta. We went to visit Clark Atlanta and Morehouse and Spelman and the Coke Factory. We had a wonderful time. We were on our way back, and it was about 11 o'clock at night, and we were coming through a small town in Georgia. And I'm driving the van, and there was a male teacher with me, and there were about 11 or so students. A police car pulled up alongside us and slowed down. I honestly didn't pay it too much attention. I was aware of my surroundings. I was driving at an appropriate speed. I wasn't, swerving or anything. But the boys became alarmed. And they were saying, "Miss Floyd, lock the doors. Miss Floyd, we'll protect you. Miss Floyd, don't worry about it." And I was kind of shocked that the mere presence of the officer in that area elicited that type of response from them. Well, true to their predictions, I was pulled over. And
What was the reason?
Zaki, do you want to tell Ms. Dr. Hollyfield what the officer said?
Well, I would love to if I knew.
You don't remember?
I sadly didn't go.
You didn't go.
Oh, okay.
The officer told me that the issue was that I was going too slow. And that he was concerned about our safety and about whether I knew where I was going. And the van was deadly silent. Like, I had never heard them be that quiet before. And what was really kind of impactful to me was that when I rolled the window up and I turned around, I couldn't find my phone. And one of the students had taken my cell phone and started a recording.
Okay.
Of the whole interaction, and just the fact that they felt that it was necessary to respond in such a manner
and
was just, it was a lot for
me to take in. That's very indicative of the climate of today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that says a lot right there. I mean, that was an excellent, excellent story, because it just illustrates everything that's going on today. Do you feel like, given all of these the multitude, again, of shootings and, you know, police violence, how has it changed your behavior? Sean.
I'm sorry. I used to be a very interactive person, you know, always joyful, walking around, talking mm-hmm. to everybody. You know, hey, yeah. How you doing? But now when I go out, I'm more quiet. I try to stick to the back so I can always watch my surroundings, because you never know in a situation what can go down or what can happen.
Okay, so it's changed. You definitely made a change to your behavior.
Yes, ma'am.
Becky.
I can say I'm more calm now, you know. Like Sean said, he stayed to the back and he quiet, watch his surroundings. I'm more like that now.
Okay.
Well, I'm interactive. I'm not wild, but, like, everywhere I go, I try to make friends, because when you go places and you see new mm-hmm. people, you try to, like, meet them with a friendly face, not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my mindset. And I know white people and black people, like, because mm-hmm. I know a lot of them, so it's nothing different to me.
Okay, all right. Have you noticed a difference in the students' attitude at all?
I think...
Just maybe even more awareness.
Right. I think the students are more aware. You know, every time there's a national issue, mm-hmm. the kids are ready to discuss it because they have perspective and they have feelings about it. So if nothing else, you know, the conversation is taking place. And from that conversation or through those conversations, kids make subtle adjustments. They still want to be teenagers. They still want to go out. They still want to mm-hmm. make friends and be socialites. But they are more aware of the day and age and the society in which they're growing up in. And so they make adjustments accordingly.
Okay. Comment?
I think that one of the probably luckier points of that is that the children are still growing up. Mm-hmm. So they have that opportunity to adjust. For example, the situation coming back from Atlanta was a shock to me. But for them, it was just a process that they had to implement mm-hmm. in order to make sure that we were all
that
safe.
That was just part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just the normal behavior that you have to go through, too. And that's interesting.
And one of the things that I also think is that the kids nowadays respect diversity a lot more than people in the past. And mm-hmm. so their first inclination is to make friends and not enemies, even though they are aware of their surroundings. You know, that's the last resort, is to separate themselves.
Have any of you, I know the answer, but maybe you don't know it. Have any of you experienced discrimination? Do you feel like you've experienced discrimination?
I think my mother has.
Okay.
Like, I don't really take offense to it, but when I go to Walmart with her and carry groceries and all that, I go to Walmart with her, and we're walking in Walmart, and some, like, people just come up and ask me if that's her son. And then she'll say, yeah, yeah, and they'll turn to me. And then she'll turn to me, and she'll say, see them, like, because I'm a white mother and you're black. You know, mm-hmm. they have to ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's awful bold that they even come and ask.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that?
Very much so.
Isn't that? Okay. So you haven't experienced any discrimination?
No, ma'am.
Other than the store.
Well, yeah, that's discrimination. Oh, okay. What about Sean?
I mean, I don't know if I've experienced, but I've seen it firsthand.
Okay, in what way?
Oh, yes. There's been a few times where I've been in stores and I've just seen it was out of this world. I can't even really explain it. It's just the way that they like to talk to us, talk down. Because
mm-hmm.
I guess she thought the woman was uneducated and that she wouldn't know the big words that she was trying to say. And mm-hmm. she just really, like, got slow, talked down like that. She slowed down her words, slurred and everything, so she could see if the woman would understand her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, she got outraged and ended up cursing out the lady and all that.
How many of you interact on a regular basis with peers who are of a different race or ethnic group than you are?
That's almost every day for me.
Okay. And what way?
I mean, how Crossroad is set up, we have, like, every different type of race in the school, so we can, you know, we grow up, like he said, our mindset is we're known to make friends before enemies, so we're surrounded by all these different type of races, and they're our friends, you know. Like, we grow up, like, in my class, I have 3 Hispanics, and they're like brothers to me, so.
Okay, and outside of school, is it the same way?
Me growing up with them, now I've met them in my ninth grade year. And now I play sports with them after school sports and all.
Okay, so you interact with them on a regular
basis? Yes, ma'am.
How about you, Sean?
I do, too. Yeah, I have plenty of Hispanic and white friends, honestly. I work with a lot of them in other fields such as music and, you know, performing arts. I've worked with a lot of people.
Okay. And, well, I guess nobody can see you smiling. We're on radio, so you still have to respond to that.
I have white friends and black friends and Hispanic friends and Filipino friends and
okay.
All above. I have friends from straight from Africa, African American friends born in America.
So, okay. What's the composition of your school?
The composition of the school is predominantly African American, but like the gentleman said, there's about 25% of the school that's Hispanic, and I would say about 2% to 5% of other mixed races.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And now, and females, it's the same.
It doesn't female, the male to female ratio, it's about equals, about 51% female to 49% males.
Okay. All right. Do you all believe that discrimination is a problem at all?
It's a big problem.
Okay. So you do believe it exists?
Yes. It exists. It happens all the time. It's just hard to really point it out and see it with your own two eyes when it's going on.
Okay. Mm. All right. So what then, I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth. So you're saying that it exists?
Yes.
Mm. Across the board?
All the way.
All the time. Okay. But maybe you're saying because it exists, it's just kind of commonplace and you don't think much about it. It's
yeah, right.
Just part. That's kind of what I hear you.
Yeah, that's what, I'm
what I feel from you. Saying,
it's what we grow
you know, it's
up,
a part of life.
Yeah, it's part of life to us.
Okay.
Everybody has stereotypes.
Okay. And they act on these stereotypes and you encounter that all the time and you probably don't even know. Okay. All right, so I've got a good feel for where you're at. You know, it's just a part of your life. Okay, you're tuned in to 411 Teen. This hour, we're examining the challenges of growing up black in America. Let's take a brief break and return to continue our discussion. What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. Race has frequently been a heated source of debate and protest with the shootings of unarmed black men. These murders by the police have brought light to the misconduct and discrimination within law enforcement. Again, this edition of 411 Teen talks with students from Crossroad Academy. We're tapping into the pulse of young folks. As far as race is concerned and dealing with individuals who are of different races, let's look at racial discrimination and racial profiling. I think one of you touched on that. It's a real egregious form of discrimination. Racial profiling targets a group because it's believed that that group is more likely to engage in a criminal activity. It's racial profiling when one goes in the store and the clerk or the security follow you throughout the store, or when women see you coming and they clutch their purse real close, you know, because they have to walk by you. Do you feel like you have experienced racial profiling?
It's good that you actually brought up that last one.
Mm-hmm.
I went to New Orleans over the summer for the Essence, and it's a time where all type of races come out. And I was in the convention center where all of the performances and everything is held.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a group of us, because I was with my music group. And I guess they saw us and didn't feel right. So we were sitting in this one spot because we were waiting for getting like a poster signed. And there was this group of females next to us. Caucasian predominantly and a few Filipinos, and I guess I don't know if they heard our conversations, but we were loud or we were just talking about music and having fun, and I just saw them shift all the way down to the other side of, like, not the convention center but the other side of the signing area, because we were all the way in the back and then we were like in line.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave up their spot. I don't know if we were all just because we're all black males and they just didn't feel right.
Okay, so you experienced that. What about you?
I mean, like you stated, with the store, as
mm-hmm,
I stated, it's basically, I was felt, you know, he was basically racial profiling me because I was black, a black male, and he was a Caucasian clerk. And so basically he was just looking at me throughout the store, seeing if I was basically, I guess, I'm assuming he was thinking out I was trying to steal or anything because of, you know, what I had on. But
what's your attitude? And I say this to all of you. How do you feel about the police? And what makes the difference, if there is a difference? I mean, if you see a white policeman, do you have a different type of reaction than you do when you see a black policeman or a Hispanic policeman? I mean, how do you feel about the police? And I'll start with you, Zimmy.
I just think that they try to do their job. And, like, I think I live in a very different world, sort of, between Zaki and Sean. So, like...
What's different about your world?
Like... It's more safer, I guess. Like, I don't have to look over my shoulder. Mm-hmm. I know somebody's, like, watching for me. And I don't know.
Okay. All right. That's how you feel?
Well, personally, I mean, I respect, you know, a police officer, don't matter the race, but it's just what has happened, you know, and throughout the world. It's like when I see a Caucasian police officer, you know, I tend to be more, you know, like, yes, sir, no sir, and all that to make sure nothing happens to me because, like, I feel like a little bit of fear, you know, towards the you know, different race.
Okay.
Traveling alone was like he said, when I see a Caucasian, when I get in fear also because if I feel like I see a black police officer, I feel like brother. You know,
well, they do you in too,
yeah. But they do you
okay.
in as well.
So let's not be.
It's hard.
Okay, let's be
it's
real
hard
here,
to be.
Okay?
It's so hard these days to be respectful to all type of race of police officers because no matter what, they're just trying to do their job at the end of the day. But I guess the way that they're pushing it at us now is just dangerous, and it's turning to the point where they're killing young men.
And it's probably not that. I guess it's just what we've seen, what we have seen, you know. That's why we feel this way. But, I mean, probably, you know, it's probably black African-American police officers probably done did almost the same thing. But we just don't know about it, you know. That's just what we saw, why we act this way.
Okay. Have you been taught to avoid the police or have you been given advice as to how to interact with them? You mentioned how you may speak differently.
Yes. With along with what Mr. Forehand said, the conversation with our men, there was a police officer out there, and he told us to just be respectful. Don't try to disrespect. You know, go about your boundaries of a, I would say citizen, and disrespect them to the point where they feel like they're threatened, and they have to threaten you back. So just be respectful. Yes, sir. No, sir. And answer all the questions that they do.
And do you feel that that's effective and that will work?
Not all the time.
Okay.
It doesn't happen all the time.
Okay. What kind of advice in these last few minutes that we have? You all are juniors in high school, and you've been there, are juniors and sophomores. I mean, you've got a little bit under your belt, so to speak. What kinds of things would you say to younger brothers or cousins or whomever who are coming up behind you as far as just coping and dealing with the world? I mean, they're going to have to go out there. They're going to walk in those same shoes that you have walked in, okay? And it seems that even if you have a kind of attitude and experience that is enmeshed in diversity, that the real world does not deal that way, okay?
Yes.
So what would you say? What kind of advice would you give to younger males of color coming up?
I would tell them, you know, stay respectful, you know. Always be respectful to your elders or, you know, anyone, you know, with authority or power over you. And, strive for what you want to do, you know. Don't give up in life, you know. Just because you see such and such happening on TV, you know, that's not you. You know, you can do better, you know. Strive for what you want.
And all of that is good, you know. That's the rhetoric that everybody runs. I mean, and their response could be, yeah, okay, I heard that. Okay, I mean, like I said, we got to be real. Yeah, okay. I mean, if you really want to make an inroad, and you really want to make a difference. I mean, you all know, what kinds of things would really hit them and make them listen? Just saying be respectful ain't going to get it, I don't think. Now, maybe I'm wrong, okay? just from my experience and interaction, I don't think that they'd be like, yeah, all right. You know what I mean?
I have some things to say. Like he said, be respectful. That's always a good point. But don't let somebody put you in a place that you don't want to be in. You can be whatever you want in life. Mm-hmm. And even though you have your parents, you know, they want you to go to college and all that type of stuff, you don't have to do that if that's not what you feel. You can always do what you like to do. Do what you please to do. Because people will try to set you in certain places and try to understate you, but you have to be greater than that. And you have to go above what people say. And once you do that, that's when people acknowledge you. That's when people see who you really are for you. And make sure you dress yourself appropriately. Don't try to fit in with styles. Because be yourself. Don't try to fit in. Fitting in isn't always cool. Being cool is being yourself. And being understood as a person is being cool also. And have fun, but have semi, not dangerous, but be careful.
Yeah. But Sean, how did you get there?
How did I get there? Mm-hmm. By being myself. Mm-hmm. I don't let anybody tell me that I can't do anything. Mm-hmm. Like if I wanted to be anything in this world, I could be it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tell myself when I wake up.
Okay. All right. Now, there's been a study by the, there have been a number of studies, but I'm thinking about the one by the Office of Civil Rights that shows the percentage of young black males suspended from school is far greater than white peers. What's going on, and why do you think this is happening?
I guess because they feel as if a Caucasian young male gets into an altercation with a black young male, that the black young male started it. It's good that you bring that up, because I got into a situation when I lived in Tampa. A little boy used to say racist remarks to me about my father and my mother, saying that I was an N-word and my mother was a coon and all types of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And one day I decided to just take all his stuff and just throw it down like the hallway. Mm-hmm. And his mother confronted me at the bus stop the next day, because I guess he went home and he felt hurt. And she threatened me all type of ways with racial slurs as he did. But luckily, I moved back down here by that time. Like the day after that, I moved back down to Tallahassee, so I didn't have to get into a big confrontation with her or her father and none of that. But it was just crazy to see how he would call me all those type of things. And we was in the same grade, the same class, and I was just as smart as him.
Principal Forehand, I want to hear your response to, because this is something that's on the national news, and we're talking about how young black males are suspended and really just totally just put out of school at such astronomical rates when you compare it to their peers.
I think it's important to for schools to be microcosms of their community and to fulfill that need. Because we have a very low suspension rate. Mm-hmm. And we take the philosophy that kids make mistakes. And since this is a school,
we're going to have mistakes.
And that you're here to learn, even if those mistakes are not academic mistakes, right. But they're mistakes in character or behavioral mistakes, it's still a school and it still is a place of learning. And I was listening to some students at FAMU. You had the same discussion about suspension rates and talking about the disparity between the staff of schools with kids of color and the actual kids themselves. You know, if you have a faculty and staff that doesn't resemble the student population, you might have some cultural conflicts. And I think that needs to be something that, is worked upon so that is a little bit more equitable. Because I think when you have people who are of the same cultural background, then they tend to just relate a lot better.
I think it's important to note also that statistics are important, but that they can be tricky.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So the to report that a certain imbalanced number of African-American males are suspended as compared to white males is only as useful as that statistic itself. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really say much about the background. It doesn't necessarily say that more black boys get in trouble than white boys. It just says that disciplinary step is taken more frequently. And I think that ties back to what Mr. Forehand said about, again, the relatability of the staff and the inclination of the staff as it relates to the attitudes of the two groups.
Well, and I would agree with you, but statistics can also have a real
yes,
all right.
Right,
because
right.
another study, for example, the Sentencing Project, mm-hmm. examined the vast disproportionate mm-hmm. rates of incarceration of black males, African American, in the prison system. You go in the prison system, and black males are, you know, yeah, they're definitely mm-hmm. in the majority.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And yet we're not 20% of the population.
Right.
Okay, so that's another thing. You know, I didn't throw in all of them, but you know, recognizing that it's a disproportionate number mm-hmm. that are in the jails. I mean, what from your perspective, what is going on?
You know, sometimes I think as an African American male, it's innately you have an innate fear. I have an innate fear. Of law enforcement. Every time
you
see one, every time the lights go off, there's something that happens that kind of disturbs you. Mm-hmm. And I think that the disproportionate statistic about being incarcerated has a lot to do with character. And I know the boys kind of touched on that and you
mm-hmm.
Responded to that. But I think it is very important to be self-aware. You know, to be in charge of yourself and to develop that character so that you can have the appropriate reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times we can't control what other people can do. We can only control how we react mm-hmm. to what other people can do.
Let me throw this out there for you all. And I appreciate your answers. Don't get me wrong. I think that you are walking on eggshells because the reality is, with what we used to call the old isms, racism and classism and sexism. And those are the things that you haven't identified because they do exist, mm-hmm. okay? Regardless of how, you know, multicultural and diverse our experiences are, the bottom line is every one of you, regardless of your racial background, look mm-hmm. like black males.
Mm-hmm.
And whether your mother is white or not, I wouldn't know that looking
mm-hmm.
at you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would look at you as black males. And just because you are a black male, that says something. That sends a message. Now, the message it sends is based on racism. Only because I can just look at your skin color and decide that you are X, Y, and Z. And that's what's happening from my perspective in the world. And I want to hear, you know, in these last 2 minutes, I want to hear your take on that. I mean, am I totally out? I mean, you know, I'm a product of the 70s, so I'm out, you know. Went to Ohio State and we took over the university. So I have a whole different kind of mindset,
mm-hmm.
okay? But is it not about racism? Because I hear now, oh, all is well, and everybody loves me,
no.
and I get along with everybody, and it's, you know, it's diversity, and, you know, where I live, and I'm not cracking on it, where I live is different than where I, but when you get out there in the real world, they ain't looking at where you live. They don't know where you come from. They don't know any of that. Does that make, what I'm saying is, you know, because I'm about really dealing with it, not just, you know, superficially addressing the kind of thing.
You know, that's something that we've discussed quite, you know, boldly at
mm-hmm.
school
mm-hmm.
Because we do produce some great scholars and kids have great academic records.
Yes.
And unfortunately, when you look at each of us, that's not the first thing that you see based on, you know, the language of the world.
Exactly.
And so we also teach them to the contrary, is that everything is not the white man's fault. And so you also have
Thank
to be responsible for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so when you're challenged in those particular situations, you want to make sure that you are doing what you need to do and that you can articulate the wrong that others are doing in the most respectful way.
Well, you know, in these last few minutes, I just want to say that I applaud all of you. I mean, I think you are doing a fantastic job. I think your school is super, and I think it just illustrates, you know, what can be done with hard work and determination. So I applaud you all, and I want to thank you for coming and sharing your insights and your experiences, and I will have you come back.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
To my listening audience, I invite you to tune in next week. Same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.